The Trials of Apollo, The Dark Prophecy, Chapter 9. Of course, it's a trap. With her, it always is one. Trappy McTrapface. Morris jumped from the ledge.
Hi, I'm Ava.
I'm Neve.
And I'm Brayden.
And this is Return to Camp Half-Blood, the English class that you always wanted.
Where we analyze the Percy Jackson and Heroes of Olympus books through a new theme every week.
Rick is trying so hard in these like chapters to just throw like any pop culture reference at the wall and be like, right, kids? Right? You like this, right?
I won't say what it is, but I will say it gets worse.
Oh yeah.
That's incredible. I'm so excited. Trappy and Trappy McTrackface, how are we this week?
Wow. I'm good. I don't know. I'm drinking a seltzer. I apparently have just gotten a new name. Unclear which is which.
You decide. Up to dealer's choice.
Okay. Well, I would prefer Trap or McTrap face, personally. So if that's okay.
With the other, I can handle it.
Okay. Thank God. Yeah, I'm chilling. I don't know what people's thoughts are in terms of seltzer flavors. But I'm having a delicious raspberry cranberry one right now. And it's lovely.
I love that for you.
Live your life.
I'm doing good. I just work all the time. I like wish I had a more interesting update, but that's really all I do. I've seen some funny characters at that job recently. I recently started a new job doing social media graphics for a nonprofit, which is very fun. Cause I like making little pictures and it's for a good cause, which is very exciting. Cause you know, sometimes marketing jobs, I was applying for a few that I was like, what exactly will I be doing? You know, I'm glad that it's for a good cause.
That's
cool. How are you, Brayden?
I'm chilling. We're just vibing. I'm drinking a Celsius, so that's always good. Excited to go to the gym.
You know, casual 9:13 p.m. energy drink.
Okay, I was at work from 8 to 6. I'm recording back-to-back podcasts, and I still have to go to the gym. So I'm drinking a Celsius.
Oh, a nighttime gym is so great because there's no one there.
Oh, I love late-night gym.
I used to love doing early as fuck morning gym at my old job because, listen, it's not for everyone, but it was for me because I would get in and out in like 40 minutes. It was fucking great.
Would not catch me. If I work a night shift, I'll go to the gym during the day, like before work, but like only because I have to. Yeah. I will love nighttime gym. Love, love, love nighttime gym. Other than that, I've been reading a book that I actually would like to recommend to our audience because it is Greek mythology related.
Oh my God. What is it?
It is a book by Anne Carson, who is a Canadian poet. She's very slay, very iconic. She is big into classics. And this book is plot twist about Geryon.
Oh my god, that's cool. Sorry.
Yes, exactly. Loosely.
Okay.
Loosely. Based on the surviving fragments of Stesichorus's poem on Geryon in the 10th labor of Hercules, which is really cool. It's like in a really like nerdy way. Like that's really, and like reconstructionists of classics. I'm really into it, but it's called The Autobiography of Red. It is tragic. It is like really queer. It is really poetic. It is really incredibly beautifully written. I'm like about a third of the way through it. It is my beach read for this week. It's called A Novel in Verse. because it's like a poetic novel and I'm really vibing with it. I've never like read a book this style. It's very unique. But I highly recommend it. It's like modernist, but really inspired by Geryon and Hercules. And they're like gay and it's sad. So if you liked Song of Achilles, this is like sadder, gayer, and like more, a little higher level reading.
Damn.
So if that appeals to you, as it might as an audience of this podcast, it's probably right in your wheelhouse.
I'm kind of obsessed with that.
It's really dark. Like content warning, it like deals with a lot of like abuse and in relationships and familial, and just putting that out there before you hop into it on my recommendation. But it is very beautiful and handled in a very like tasteful way. Yes. Ava, you will love it. You should really read it.
I know. I already went to check online what Barnes and Noble's it is carried by, so I think I will be going tomorrow. Because I got this when I was in Ireland earlier this summer. We were in this like beautiful bookstore in Galway, and I found this book by, I can't remember her name, but she's like an incredible author and does a lot of classical reconstruction. But it's a book called Ithaca, and it's about Penelope. And I literally, I can't wait to read it. So I might, oh God, I have to see if that's going to come before the Geryon book or after, but.
Is it by Claire North?
Yes.
Or Catherine Webb?
Claire North. She's fierce.
It seems like that might be, Claire North is actually Catherine Webb.
No way!
All right. Real slay. Okay. Ooh, this looks good. Maybe that's my next read after.
Yay!
Look at us reading classics. I have another classic book that is on my list. It's the one that you recommended to me. That's the other Madeline Miller one, the short one.
Oh, Galatea.
Galatea. Oh.
Galatea is so good. I also have waiting to be read, A Thousand Ships by, I can't remember who, but it's about the Trojan War. Anyway, I'll stop.
We love this genre.
Yeah, we do.
With that, welcome back to Return to Camp Half-Blood, a podcast that is also about reconstructing Greek myths and being gay. So this week we're discussing the Trials of Apollo, the Dark Prophecy, chapters 9 through 12. And once again, Robert is joining us. If you remember from last week.
Hey, what's up? It's me. Why is the fucking vine the first thing that came to my mind?
I was thinking it too.
I thought you were going to go full head.
I just got to do the four. Hey, it's me, your boy, Skinny Penis.
Please.
You got to do the meme.
Of course.
Oh God. Oh, remember?
I miss Vine.
Yeah,
I miss Vine. Isn't, it's not funny anymore. It's like lost to fun. Like I used to be able to rewatch Vines and find them funny. They aren't anymore, which is sad. I miss that.
But they are good for referencing in your day-to-day life. I cannot tell you how many times I will see a road work ahead sign and say, I sure hope it does.
I say that to myself when I'm in the car alone sometimes.
Incredible.
Yeah, no, I say that out loud.
Vine was just such a time, and it's weird that like I think we're on the track for Twitter to like die out like Vine, and like Twitter's gonna die out like Tumblr, where it's still gonna be around, but like it's not the same as it used to be. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
I don't know, it's like rapidly losing money. It might actually like, because like Vine was closed because it couldn't afford to operate anymore. And like, it just is rapidly, it's losing money so fast.
They're just like,
holes in the pipe. Like it's crazy.
They barely moderate Twitter at this point though. So it's
yeah,
like,
yeah, that's true.
Like what is it going to cost to just leave it up and let it be
Yeah. Like, one of the most interesting things I've seen on the internet in a while is Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg like threatening to fight each other. Cause that's just so funny. Like just like final boss internet funny. And like, they're both horrible people. But like, it's funny to watch them threaten to fight each other.
Like physically.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, you know how like YouTubers hold that event every year that like they have YouTubers who box each other. They want to do that. And they want to tell them, or they want to stream it on, I believe on Twitter. And I'm like, yeah, you know, what's exciting watching two middle-aged rich men fight each other.
And Mark Zuckerberg was like, Elon Musk keeps threatening, like, I'm lifting weights at work to prep for this. And Mark Zuckerberg's like, I wanted to do this on the 26th of August, but I haven't heard back and I'm not holding my breath. I'm like, Mark Zuckerberg, what's going on? You're the CEO of like one of the world's biggest companies. And you're like threatening to fight some loser from Tesla on Twitter. So
that's a terrible way to schedule. Like, use a when to me. Why are you just picking dates and saying this is when I want to do it? What if he's not?
Because Mark Zuckerberg is a robot, so he doesn't really know how humans interact.
What if Elon Musk has a prior commitment on August 26th?
Exactly.
Or 28th, whenever it was.
Yeah.
I won't be there, so why do I need to know?
I hope it happens. I'll watch videos of it after the fact.
Oh no, for sure. I mean, if I'm around, if I don't have anything better to do, I'll watch it live.
Okay, but what would be worse, spending money to watch this fight or spending money or spending money to go to the Empire State Building to watch the Lightning Thief movie?
Because
that's the thing that's happening this year for Percy's birthday, but it's like $170 to go watch it.
That's okay. This is crazy.
A bad movie?
Yeah.
But like at like a location that is, let's be real. I hope the Empire State Building herself isn't listening to this podcast. If you are,
herself.
But you as a building, come on.
As like, a building?
You're not that special anymore. You were real tall once. You're not even that tall anymore. Like the Empire State Building hasn't shrunk. They're just our taller buildings.
You've gotten a lot shorter, Empire State Building.
No, but like Dubai really like 10 upped the Empire State Building. So like, what has she got? Like, she's like a pretty building. Her biggest claim to fame at this moment is she's the star of the Percy Jackson books.
That's her biggest claim to fame.
Yeah.
I mean, she's also the Empire State Building.
The singular Empire State Building. I don't know. I can tell you, I went up the Empire State Building a few months ago. Not like, it's exciting to go up with friends, but like if I could get no one else to go with me, I would not spend $170 to watch any movie, let alone the Percy Jackson movie.
I haven't spent that much money on a concert ticket. The most I've ever spent on a concert is like $80 for Lady Gaga, which is the top tier person for me.
Yeah. Shout out to the one time I bought $40 nosebleed tickets for a 21 Pilots show. And then I found out there was another venue in New York where the general admission was also like $30. I'm like, I'm getting a general admission ticket. Fuck this.
Slay.
Yeah, don't pay that much money for anything.
No.
Though I will keep her, it is iconic to just being known as like the anything. It is iconic in itself.
I will say, I saw recently a post of a guy who had bought like front row or like pit, whatever, tickets for Taylor Swift. And he was able to resell them for like 12 grand total. So he's like, yeah, hey, thank you for paying for my college.
It's crazy how much people will spend on stuff. Like, just don't.
Yeah. Just don't. I didn't even pay that much to go see my favorite artist, and tickets were like insane. Like, I don't know. I got like the back of the venue for Hozier in Chicago, and it's Chicago too. And like, barely triple digits, barely. And I felt icky about that.
So yeah. It's like 100 is probably the most I would pay for a concert.
And yeah. And that's pretty much what.
Yeah.
And that's a lot less than $170 for a movie that's on Disney Plus.
always seen.
But you could also watch that movie on the internet pretty much anywhere. Mm. And I would recommend doing that for now.
For now, hey.
This is the first time in my life I've ever recommended Sailing the High Seas.
Oh, Sail the High Seas. That was honestly like, if you look through the quote-unquote history of people who fought against piracy, their biggest argument was like, well, if you pirate a movie or a TV show or whatever, then the people who worked in it aren't getting paid. And then it turns out the people who worked in it aren't getting paid regardless. So pirate away.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, that's the thing. I do believe it, like, fundamentally, like, in not pirating things because of that reason. But, like, currently, with streaming, as fucked people, the people who need to be paid over, I don't believe in giving money to the studios. I believe in giving money to artists.
But the billionaires will only make $315 billion instead of $316 billion, and that's a travesty.
Please. No, I know.
I wish they made zero.
Off with their heads.
Off with their heads. Someone to bring out the guillotine.
With that, let's do the summary.
Oh my god, we haven't even done the fucking summary.
We haven't even gotten to the summary yet. We are all over the place this episode. All right, homie. And I'm loving it.
All right, hit me with that timer.
Luckily for you, I need to pull it up. So you have a little time to get your go.
Oh god, okay, so Britta Martis is here. She's the goddess of nets. She traps Apollo. She has this weird flirting thing with Apollo because Apollo flirts with her and all the other hunters of Artemis, but like she's not gonna act in it. It's just a weird thing. And they have to go to the zoo, but before that they Apollo goes to bed and he dreams about Agamemnon like losing his head and Trophonius having to kill him so that they don't like find out who he is. Trophonius was like, hey, don't do this, Apollo, please help, and Apollo just didn't do it because fuck you. We also get to find out that Meg escaped Commodus and she's somewhere in Indiana now looking for Apollo, and then also Apollo and Calypso go to the zoo.
That was great. Just like they do. The triumphant, they go to the zoo.
They go to the zoo.
I don't know about y'all. Zoo date / aquarium date, top five dates right there.
I agree. I'm still gonna, as I said the first episode of the season, rank museum, science museum highest because there are a lot of activities.
There's a great science museum in Queens. That I only went to once when I was like maybe 12 or 13, and I'm like, I need to see the science.
I mean, I loved science museums when I was young. It's just like, it's the very pro ADHD museum.
That's true.
Like, I don't even really like science that much. I just like doing things.
They give you so many things to play with in a science museum.
Yes. Give me like the lots of blocks, gears. You can turn things.
And there's also, I love when they have like a wind tunnel.
Love a wind tunnel. Weather.
Okay,
weather.
I'm also a big fan of when it's like a natural history museum and you get to dig in the sand and find fossils.
Yes. A fossil moment is great. Also when they have the buttons, like the Springfield Science Museum that I grew up near has like a animal exhibits, you know, the parts where they have the animals because it's a museum, but they're dead, not a zoo.
True.
And I don't know why I'm explaining museums. But you get to like press the buttons and it lights up the different sections and you're like, oh, there's the monkey, oh, there's the zebra, oh, that was alive at one point and now it's taxidermy, but we're not going to get into the ethics of that, or the ethics of zoos. We'll probably get into the ethics of zoos more next week because I feel like we're gonna spend more time in the zoo next week. We just entered the zoo here, so I don't want to do 2 weeks on the ethics of zoos. We've already done the ethics of aquariums, but they're fun, they're sweet,
they're fantastic. I don't know anything about the Indianapolis Zoo. Spoiler alert, that might be my vote off this week, the Indianapolis Zoo. Just fucking Indianapolis for some reason.
Yeah, I can't imagine the Indianapolis Zoo is like a conservation zoo. Like it, I don't know. Well, I guess the internet exists and we can look this up.
I mean, we could, but like, here's the thing. What's interesting about Indianapolis?
Nothing.
The Indy 500, which only the people in Indianapolis care about. And also I heard once that if you wanted to open a restaurant, if it does well in Indianapolis, it will do well everywhere else because Indianapolis is the crossroads of America. Blech.
Oh, why?
Why?
I just don't think I trust that.
I'm sorry to any of our listeners if you live in Indiana, and we've been really shitting on Indiana.
Oh, no, Indiana's fine. Indianapolis.
Just Indianapolis. Oh. I'm not pro the whole thing. It is a nonprofit zoo.
That being said, Indianapolis has Crown Hill Cemetery, which is the cemetery with the most vice presidents buried in it.
That's so random. I love it.
Hyper specific.
The most vice presidents. Come on, Vito.
Okay. Wait, maybe this is a kind of slay zoo. It's accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which is dedicated to the advancement of zoos and public aquariums in the areas of conservation, education, science, and recreation, which like feels like better. Like there's a lot about their conservation and research work, which feels better than a for-profit zoo. But like generally zoos can only be good now because zoos were bad. And then we made animals not able to live on their own. And now we like have to take care of them. Like a short-term version of the dog.
Please.
What songs did we bring this week?
Okay, I'm going to get mine out of the way because it has absolutely nothing to do with the chapters. It's just a revelation I had this week, and I need to know if I'm just an idiot. So I was listening to the radio, like we just had the radio on in the car. And that song,
yes. Sorry,
that song, "Fast Car" came on, but like the what the fuck is his name? He's a country artist, Luke Combs, I think. Luke Bryant could also be
Luke
it.
Combs. It's Luke Combs.
Okay, so I was listening to it in the car. I was like, I like this song, and it plays all the time at work. But like, I'm not gonna listen to Luke Combs. So, and my mom was like, "Well, guess what? It's not his song." And I was like, "What? It's a cover."
You didn't know that?
No, I had no idea. It's actually a direct fucking rip from a different artist. Yeah. So now I can listen to it, which I'm really excited about, but I literally had no idea. And like, what a shitty thing. Like, yeah, I guess she's definitely getting like a significant cut of the of the money that's coming from this song, but it's playing everywhere. It plays at least 7 times a day if I'm at work for more than like 6 hours. And like, it went like platinum. I did like a whole bunch of like research into it. So I was like, this is so like, it's not even like in the title that this is not his own song. Like, you know, when you look it up on like iTunes or Spotify or something and are like in the title, it just says like Fast Car, Luke Combs on his album, not even mentioned at all in the title. Like, this isn't my song. And like, I should probably have known that it wasn't his song. Cause I do listen to a lot of music and I felt like it sounded like familiar. But I just couldn't place from where. And now I'm putting it on the playlist cause I now found out I can happily listen to this song without supporting Luke Combs. And I actually suggest all of you do the same as well, because why the fuck are we listening to Luke Combs version of this song that was released like 25 years ago by a black queer woman artist that is like not the only getting like half the proceeds. And now the song's going like crazy viral because a white guy who is boring looking is singing it now.
Yeah.
And half is generous.
Exactly. I was literally stunned. I was so angry for this situation that I had just found out was happening.
Wait, that's wild, because I feel like I've known Tracy Chapman's Fast Car ever since I was like really young. And like, it is such a legendary song to me, and she is so legendary to me. But like, there is very much something to be said for like, it's also such a sad song. Like, oh my God, love it. But there's something to be said for like white male country artists coming in and like
like at just the right time for him to like make a few generations or like a few, I guess, maybe like one generation think it was all his.
Yeah.
Because
and it's not like, ever like mentioning anything in the marketing that would imply like, this is not my song.
Right. Right.
Which and just like silently giving the money.
Cause it's
to
like
to be given, you know?
Right.
Elvis core.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause it's weird. It's like, I feel like some people will definitely know that it's covered, but like he can't just operate under the assumption that everyone will, because like it is past the time where like the people who like were listening to the original Fast Car by Tracy Chapman on the radio are listening to like maybe the same stations. So like it doesn't no, yeah, it rubs me very much the wrong way. I kind of hate it. Yeah, glad she brought that up.
Hey, so can I be a monster and tell my and say mine?
Yes.
Get your head in the game from High School Musical.
Oh, mine's even worse, but I love it.
Let's hear it.
No, I want to end it. Brayden?
Now, like, if this just gave me permission to, like, my... I had a choice that was, like, really on it. Like, Love It When You Hate Me by Avril Lavigne and Black Bear. It like it feels really right for the Bruno Mars Apollo relationship. But if we're going with net songs, I have to do Swish Swish.
You have to. You have to do that.
Pink Ferragamo slider is on deck.
I love it. No, you do. And that goes along very well with my song, which is the very own Fetty Wap's Trap Queen.
That was great.
Because she is the Trap Queen.
Oh my God. This is, I'm going to add Love It When You Hate Me as well. Just so we have like one song that is applicable at all. But I am also adding Swish Swish. So don't you worry. I'm gonna do the acoustic version, so it's like even more serious.
That's funny.
Just okay, the song is bad, but the Nicki verse is so good.
I agree.
Yes.
It's like one of her better verses, which is crazy because it's on Swish
Swish,
which is a song off Witness, which is an album.
An album no one listened to.
I didn't even know the name of the album it was on, so.
Yeah, it's, I couldn't name another song on Witness, frankly. Nope, that's not true. Chained to the Rhythm.
Oh, that's an okay song.
That one was like fine.
That was pretty good.
It's No Daisies.
This song,
Daisies. I've thought of this song like a lot of times in the past couple of weeks. This song came out in 2020, but I brought, no, probably 2019. The album came out in like the spring of 2020, like before, pre-pandemic, maybe like January of 2020. An album that was also met with not acclaim. But Daisies. That's what she sounds like.
I don't know if I know Daisies, but we'll
yes, talk about- you do. Okay. Listen to it. Hold on, Never wait, Really wait. Over is also off that album.
That's a banger. I do like that one.
This is me proving I know a little too much about Katy Perry's discography. Meaning like the names of her albums, which is more than anyone needs to know.
Yeah.
I don't know the songs that well, so I'm still safe. I have no reason to know this either. I do not actively listen to Katy Perry besides Never Really Over and Daisies.
That sounds
and like Waking Up in Vegas.
Actively listens to Katy Perry. Yeah, I love Waking Up in Vegas.
What were our favorite parts of these chapters to bring us way back to this book?
Like, I'll get back to this in my sass moment, but the haikus were especially good.
They were funny.
They were banging.
Yeah.
I forget where... For me, there's a point where the haikus start cringe. They get kind of funny, and then they get cringe again. And I think we're in that sweet spot where they're funny.
Yeah.
But maybe then again, you guys in general like the haikus, which is like not the experience I had when I read these for the first time.
I think they're so stupid. I love them.
I think I just like I was talking about last week, something about the way it characterizes Apollo is just really gets at my soul.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I too am a stupid haiku.
Yeah.
A stupid gay haiku.
Yeah. It also, I feel like it proves that Rick also just doesn't, he understands what he's writing and like understands that like he doesn't take it too seriously, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I agree. It's the levity of it, I think, really works.
Yeah.
Like the titles did in the first books.
Yeah.
I was also just frankly like, but a Martis. Okay, icon.
Right? She's fierce. I like her.
We know I love a mean woman.
You do love a mean woman.
And she's so mean. And it's like, I'm loving it. Something about the dynamic too, the way I was with her when she was like, there's something like really iconic that I'm doing right now where I'm telling people who used to be immortal to go on a quest for me. And I find that great because like, remember when you used to be better than me and now I'm better than you? I was here for that. I thought she was iconic for that. Real Housewives of Olympus, Brenna Martis, is like the friend of who joins like two seasons later and you're like, she should have been on the main cast this entire time.
Yeah.
Other than that, the rest of the chapters was all right.
Yeah. I loved her. I thought she slayed. I liked also finding out more well, about Georgina. And also, finally learning the name.
Yes. Toilet.
Spoil it?
I said toilet.
Oh.
Because that's a joke Leo makes.
Yeah.
Yeah. did I say my favorite part? My favorite part is just the whole I keep wanting to say like rigor mortis. That's not
rigor mortis. That's not
mortis at all. Brito Martis. It tickles the brain in the way that I almost want to say Bruno Mars.
I keep thinking you all are saying Bruno Mars, and I know you're not.
Brito Martis. Who wants to know how it's spelled? Because it's terrible how it's spelled.
I love how it's spelled because it's so iconic.
Brito, like almost like Brita, but with an O instead of an A, and then Martis.
Yeah.
It's terrible. But like yeah.
Two more T's than you expect to be there.
Honestly. But yeah, I know the whole shtick she has with Apollo. And also with Calypso. Holy shit, she's sassy.
He is sassy.
She's so mean, and I love it. I love the like Looney Tunes thing she has, where she's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna tell him I'm gonna kiss him, but then I'm gonna run him over with my car." you can tell from my excitement. I am stanning her so hard.
She actually reminds me so much of you all, or at least one of you knows Charlie Brown. She reminds me so much of Lucy.
I like that you picked something that was like really like broadly almost universally known and went like at least one of you has to know the Peanuts.
No, you're either a Peanuts family or a Muppets family, and if you are
you can be both.
Okay, I've never met a both before you, I guess. We are so aggressively a Peanuts family, and I met Muppets families who don't know anything about Peanuts, and we don't know as much about the Muppets as maybe we'd like to. So I just
had I feel like you know a lot about the Muppets, Apo.
I learned about the Muppets in college. Well, I watched their movies. I watched their movies when I was young, but
I've seen their body of work.
Stunning work.
I'm very familiar with the Muppets filmography.
The MCU. No, not the Marvel, the Muppet Cinematic Universe.
We love the Muppet Cinematic Universe in this household. In this podcast household.
Aw.
The Muppet movies. All of them. The originals, the new ones. The Muppets Most Wanted.
Yeah. The SNL sketch about the Muppets.
Gonzo, generally. Non-binary icon.
Non-binary icon. It's always so funny to me when I do see those TikToks that are like, I base my fashion off of the one true non-binary icon, Gonzo.
Yeah, Gonzo do be dressing like most gay people.
The other thing that I really liked was, which of the Animaniacs do you dress as if you're a lesbian?
Real. Gay people too, gay men too. The Animaniacs are very queer. I also enjoy the Animaniacs. They're also very funny. Classic cartoon humor. Let's take a break. And then we'll be back to talk about longevity and let maybe stay on topic of these books.
Maybe.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Time for Animaniacs, then we're zany to the max.
And with that, we're back.
Mm-hmm.
Relax till you collapse, we're the Animaniacs.
Longevity. Where do we want to go first with longevity? I mean, we started talking about Commodus a little bit, and I just want to, like, there's not much development with this, but, like, I'm making the assumption, I think it's pretty clear that, like, he's Apollo's ex, right?
Oh, yes. I feel like, yeah.
They used to fuck, and no. Apollo is not proud of it.
No, he shouldn't be, because all I know about this emperor is that he's the son of Marcus Aurelius, so already you're setting yourself up to be a disappointment. Mm. And then he goes through his reign and does absolutely nothing right. Like, he doesn't care about his job, which is unfortunate because he's quite literally an emperor, doesn't do anything except worry about who he's dating. And, like, that's all he can focus on. And then he just kills people when he wants to. I'm like,
you just explained him terribly, because that sounds incredible. You know, like, that sounds like he was living the life, like, fuck his job. Yeah. He's just dating people. And then he kills people he doesn't like. And I know that's not okay, but I do think it's the life we all want.
It is. And I think maybe if he weren't in charge of running a really powerful city state, then, like, maybe you could live a life like that with no consequence. However, this little fucker is the son of maybe the greatest emperor Rome has ever seen. So you got to care about your people, my friend. Also, I'm mad at him because he had a trial run of running Rome with his dad before his dad died. I'm like, you quite literally, like, you didn't even have to climb the ladder. You were already there with, like, the president of the company learning the ropes. And you did what? Flush it all down the toilet.
Commodus.
I'll be done talking now.
She is a history major. She graduated minor, but the way you talk.
Yeah. There's nothing minor about the way I talk about history.
All right. You really tried with that one. Maybe it landed for someone at home.
It probably didn't, and that's okay.
But yeah, they used to date, and Apollo was ashamed about it. And I have a lot of empathy for Apollo, because this is real. Like, sometimes we date people and then we're like, can't believe I did that.
Honestly, Jesus Christ. By the way,
that really made Ava laugh, because she knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Shade to that singular person who's being talked about. I will say, I always find it so funny when Rick does the whole my characters are not having sex bit, and I understand that perfectly well for the kid characters, but like, it's Apollo and a Roman emperor. You know what the Romans did? Bunch of gay sex.
Yeah. And like, realistically, I know this isn't going to happen in this book, but there is like no way in like a non PG 13, maybe, it's just like rating of a book, like the R-rated realistic version of this book, he hooks up with his ex, because like, that's what gay people do. They hook up with their ex that they're not supposed to.
Yeah, call me out more, why don't you?
Yeah, we're just all being disasters on this podcast, in this book, in this everywhere. Gay people are awful. Gay people are terrible. They make terrible decisions.
There are 5 in the whole world, and 3 of us are right here making questionable decisions.
For sure. The other 2 are Apollo and Commodus.
and we have historical, not evidence, but like, well, kind of. Commodus, like, historically is canonically bisexual, so.
Iconic, but also bad.
Most of the Greeks and Romans were bisexual. I mean, or some flavor of queer. I mean, there are so many stories.
About it. It's a lot of text. It's crazy.
Like Hercules.
Oh, yeah, they had a thing.
No, they. Commodus?
No, they didn't. He just was in love with him because he wanted to be him so bad. Never mind.
Oh, yes, because he's like, I'm the new Hercules.
Yeah.
And that's really gay if I've ever heard it. It's like, guys, I think I'm the new Hercules. Like, okay.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
We get it. You're a bottom. We get it.
I love how this implies that Hercules is the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. That was my entire thought process. Young Ryan Gosling played young Hercules. We also watched that Disney movie. What other like proof do we need? The Disney movie.
Oh, he voiced young.
Oh no, but there was a TV show that I loved when I was younger called Young Hercules. It was starring Ryan Gosling.
Wow.
He looks great in it. That's all.
Happy for you.
He's also, listen, Ryan Gosling and Hercules walked so that Ryan Gosling and Ken could run.
Exactly.
And boy, did Ken run.
Run, Ken, run.
Incredible performance. Sorry, I need to stop.
Where else do we see longevity in these chapters?
Sorry, I've been talking. I will say, on the actual topic of longevity, in reference to Commodus and Marcus Aurelius, I really think that Commodus kind of got his just desserts, because no one knows who the fuck he is. But everyone knows who Marcus Aurelius is. And I think that like, there is something to be said for like, very occasionally, because broadly, like the longevity of stories is kind of random. From a historical lens, but like, I really do appreciate that, like, Marcus's devotion to goodness. Obviously he had his moments. God knows every emperor does, but like, his devotion to goodness is honored by like the longevity of how long his story has kind of been alive and almost like household type. Whereas with Commodus, it's like, you really got to kind of work to know who that is.
Yeah. And
like, there's no longevity to his name anymore, really. I mean, so I think it just speaks to, like, if you don't work hard to be good for your people, will your people, like, give voice to your name after you're gone?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but also, like, living in infamy is the thing that's interesting about Commodus. He was just kind of, like, bad at his job, but he wasn't, like, doing Nero. Like, right. Nero is, like, he played the fiddle, the violin, the harp, whatever, lyre, whatever instrument. It was a stringed instrument, but he was playing it, and Rome burned. Anyways, but, like, Caligula, like, these are people we remember for being real terrible. Diocletian, like, they did real bad things. But, like, Commodus was just kind of, like, a flop. Yeah. Like, a hot flop, I guess, like, is what we're meant to believe. Like, or just maybe just Apollo thinks so. But boo. Boo-hoo.
Yeah.
One of the other big parts of this chapter that, like, I feel like bears a lot of discussing is the little Trophonius Agamethus moment where he cuts off his head, but in not the way you expected him to lose his head. I was like, okay, plot twist.
That was haunting, though. Oh my God.
I love when we get a little bit of horror in it. Like, the body horror in this book is kind of really cool from Rick, because we've just never really gone in this direction before. And something about him, his head having to be caught off by his brother, like, to save him, is, like, so dark. I was just really interested in it.
It was.
I wonder if we'll ever find his head. Like, this to me implies his head's coming back.
You think they left a door open for the head to...
I do think they left the door open for the head.
The head just appears at the end of the book like it's a Marvel cameo.
The end credit scene. But there's a box somewhere and we zoom in on it and the head is just, like, in there, like, screaming.
Please.
Made it so much crazier just with that one word.
Thank you. I try. I'm trying my darndest. I mean, I feel like we have to deal, like, we talked about how much Brenna Martis was iconic, but not at all about her story. Her being a Cretan goddess that was where her pantheon died out, but she was adopted. I was like, this is so good, Rick Riordan. Look at you and your classics and history knowledge. And, like, I'm a big, like, religious and history person, and the development of world religions as piecemeal of prior religions, and as religions die out, they get subsumed into other religions. Like, I mean, the most clear example is, like, almost every pagan religion of Eastern Europe, the Catholics went, you're a saint. You weren't real, you weren't a god, but you can be a saint, because, like, they just went, okay, you guys worship this god. They're not a god, first off, because we have a god. His name is God.
Please.
We didn't get creative. We just went, God, lowercase g, God, capitalized. And they said, but your god, I think they were, like, a saint. Maybe they were an angel. I think they're, like, friends with our god. And so, like, you can still worship God, but, like, know that your God is just, like, an assistant to my God. But it worked. It's such a sinisterly clever thing that the Catholic Church did to, like, control Europe and then the world. frankly. There's so much to get into there. But that being tracked even in this ancient version of the Cretan to Greek to Roman is really interesting. And so the survival of Brenna Martis as this minor goddess that would have been really important to Crete, which is an island in the Mediterranean, which is thrives off of seafaring culture. So that she is a goddess of nets and hunting because she's a more ancient goddess. And that would be a really important goddess to a pantheon that is pre the Greek pantheon. That is a little bit more of a developed society. That is the Greek pantheon that is cemented in our minds is one of a democratic Greece that is kind of already questioning the validity of the gods versus they're developing science and math. Therefore, the gods are more these ideas of this cultural, this civilization of gods, whereas the Cretan gods are more gods of the wild, more feudalistic gods, but much more similar to like the Gaelic, the Norse gods. But her being adopted into this pantheon as like an assistant to Artemis in this way that's like personal, but also embedded in like the development of history and religion. I was obsessed, clearly, as I'm going on and on about it. Someone else say something, please.
So you know that all history just goes back to tuberculosis? No, okay.
Please. No, because I agree. Not on the tuberculosis point. But I agree with Britain's point completely. I think it's fascinating, but it also brings into like I don't know it like her being a Cretan goddess is so fascinating because A, it begs the question, when did then the Olympian god, like how, what is their origin story slash now does time matter to them? Like they come into existence at a specific time that can be associated with any historical event human wise. And were they not just sitting there forever and ever, like kind of was implied? I think it's really interesting if they weren't. And also the idea that like, it makes once again, and Rick is just doing a better and better job with this. Like it makes these like hard to reach, like inaccessible, I guess, not only like deities, but like kind of historical and classical figures more accessible because like there's that constant immortality debate that like we as a society have of like, would you want to be immortal? Like all your friends and family would like just be gone and you'd have to like carry on and everyone you get close with, you'd have to see them like go through the life cycle and you wouldn't be able to do like, we are so like that debate is so ingrained in our society and like these weird between the lines ways. And we're kind of able to see her go through that as her own pantheon dies out. When the idea of like the Greek pantheon dying out isn't even really one that we entertain. Like we know that they'll be fine. Like even in the War with the Titans, we're like, we know that they'll be fine. So it's this idea that like that threat, that like the overall threat of like non-existence is real. And like, it just makes, it's so cool because it makes it even more ancient than we've been dealing with deity and character more accessible to modern day, which I'm just beyond obsessed with clearly. So
she's also really tied in two other key ways, which I'm also obsessed with, which is one, Calypso is also Cretan. Like we literally talk about her speaking Minoan. So that was just like, and that relationship there, which isn't really talked about, is kind of brushed over, but is really interesting to me. And I'm just wondering if we get into it a lot because I would like us to get into it more, but it's okay if we don't. But also the emperors. This idea of what makes a god, is really tied up and important in this series. Because it's about Apollo, and this is like the question is why is Apollo a god? Especially if his godliness can be taken away. And then godliness can be given and gained or corrupted and stolen by these characters like the emperors or shifted like Brenna Martis by cementing yourself in people's stories and histories. Again, very Neil Gaiman.
But you know what I've always loved?
Yeah, I love American Gods. It's so, like, not the, I don't even think the book is that good. I just think the concept, I love the concept. The book is good. But, like, the concept I love even more than the book. I actually think Good Omens is a better Neil Gaiman title. Anyways. I've been talking a lot.
That's okay. This is a podcast.
You know, fair enough. Do you have any other thoughts?
I mean, I think the longevity of Joe and Emmy's relationship is very sweet. That's it.
Yeah. Very sweet. Love them. Very cute.
God, very imagine finding love so strong that you're willing to give up immortality.
Oh.
Yes. There we go. Longevity. They give up immortality. Longevity. Immortality as a concept throughout these books is really interesting because it's like not something that exists, but also is something that exists because of memory, and that's what we're dealing with, and like legacy. It's so interesting.
More subjective, which I love.
It's so compelling to me. It's so much more, these books are so much more interesting than Heroes of Olympus.
Yeah, I agree.
Though, speaking of Heroes of Olympus, Lit is back.
Which is funny because a lot of people, I think, in the fandom, like, prefer Heroes. Like, you could run a poll right now and be like, have you read Trials of Apollo? You'll get a bunch of no's because people just sort of fell off and didn't want to keep reading it for some reason.
Oh yeah, we haven't read it until now. Like, yeah. We are those people.
Yeah. And it's just, I always think, like, the first two books of the Trials of Apollo books kind of feel slow for me. They pick up like around the end of this book, beginning of next book, for reasons. And what that? That was a drawer. And I'm just happy y'all are reading it because it's a good book series, even if I think some parts of it are slow. And B, let's pretend I had a B.
All right. I loved your B. That B was so interesting. Thank God.
Oh, what's that? Speaking of old vines, what's that one? It's like, my name's like Michael with a B. And I'm afraid of insects. Where's the B? There's a B.
Oh, literally a masterpiece.
Mm.
That one's a good one. That one is a real classic.
I am terrified of bees. I love them. They're little buddies trying to help pollination, but I'm terrified of them.
Me too.
Is it time for sass moments?
Yes, let me pull mine up. I'm going to get to it first because I feel like some of you might already have this one. Something about a train and children made of potatoes. Tater tots are food. Tater tots are food, but that is an understandable mix-up for a god.
We love.
Me too. Y'all can go.
I'm trying to find mine. I lost mine.
Can I get mine?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Yes, you can.
I'm just a sucker for any time the arrow to Dona speaks. So now hast thou asked too many questions, the arrow intoned. My wisdom doth not spew forth answers as if 'twere Google.
I love it. So good.
I am also picking an Arrow of Dodona moment because these two pages are hilarious that we're all picking from. Seekest thou the choo-choo? The choo-choo? Is there an echo in here?
I almost picked that one.
Oh my God. It was just, I felt that sass. Like that was something I would say. And I really was feeling that.
You would. And that's why it made me laugh so hard when you said it just now.
It was just a very like, did I stutter?
Is there an echo in here? I love that. I'm going to start using that. So I still have two. I'll begin with, let's see. The emperor, he loves naming things after himself. At the ceremony, he plans to rechristen Indianapolis. That in itself did not strike me as a tragedy. Indianapolis was a rather difficult name to love. Thought that was funny.
Book Indianapolis.
Which was wild because I'm like, you literally have polis right there and that's Greek, so whatever. But I also was just maybe a huge fan. That's not what I meant to say.
She's just like a huge fan.
I do believe the haiku to start 11 was my favorite haiku to date. Four beheaded dudes are too much for one nightmare. Why me? Sob, sob, sob.
The three. That one was a little millennial to me, I can't lie. Sob, sob, sob was giving big millennial energy. No offense.
Three of them. The fact that there are three of them is what makes it funny.
Yeah. No, there's four. Four total.
What?
There's the three that get killed in the Coliseum.
No, he's in the sobs.
Three sobs.
Oh, the three sobs. Yeah. Okay. I'm like, wait a minute. Rick. I think I said either at the beginning of this episode or last episode that, you know, or at some point at the middle of this episode where I'm like, yeah, the haikus get kind of cringe. This one isn't cringe. It's lazy in a he worked hard for it way, if you know what I mean.
I agree. It feels like intentionally bad.
I loved it.
Yeah.
That's why I like them, because they're not good.
Exactly.
And like, it's very in line with Apollo, and that's why I love them. I also just, I forgot to bring this up. We brought up the beheadings. I just need to bring up Marcus for a second, because in the last chapters, we spend like half a page describing him. But like, he's like older, hotter Nico. And we spend a long time describing him. He has these like illusion powers. And then he's dead two chapters later. So I was like, okay, we spent a lot of time setting up this guy as if he would be important. And then he wasn't. So why did we spend that time? I thought that was incredibly funny. That's it. Because then we have Lit. And Lit, as we discussed, in 6-5 books ago, is hot. But evil. Yeah. But like, only a little evil. Like, not the most evil. Who are offerings for?
Marcus Aurelius.
I had a feeling.
I'll give mine to Calypso.
Oh, true.
Oh, yeah, she had a moment.
She did.
That's about it. Like,
yeah, I like her. She deserves it.
Did this part include where Apollo and Calypso sort of have a yelling fight and Apollo's like, yeah, you chose to be mortal for love. Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, that was crazy.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, you know that meme that's like, you know, you picked the wrong option, the wrong dialogue choice in a video game?
Yeah.
That's pretty much what happened.
Funny.
I gotta honor my boy, the Arrow Dodona. Love him.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I don't think we've given the Arrow an offering yet.
But we must.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've given a lot of compliments, but...
Never a full offering, so I'm glad that the move was made.
The enchantment doth start. Plaguey, plaguey, plaguey.
Like, yeah. I don't think anyone will be surprised that my offering is for Britta Martis.
Yeah, too.
My icon, my queen, she has supplanted Carly Rae Jepsen and Lady Gaga as my favorite diva. I keep picturing her as like Kyle Richards of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She has like, she just has that vibes.
I see it. Wait, that's funny.
And she, like I said, she's just giving Real Housewives energy, and I'm really here for it. She's so mean to Apollo, and it's so funny. Who are we voting off? I think I have to even out the vote for gay people last week and vote off gay people this week, because based on our conversations last week versus this week, last week gay people were doing well. This week, gay people are Commodus and Apollo, and this is the bad side of gay people, the gay men. Last week we're talking about gay women.
Oh my god!
Listen, don't get it twisted. We do dumb shit, but. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
So, bye-bye gay people.
True. I'm going to vote off Bruno Mars because his name sounds too much like an ancient goddess's name, and she's more relevant.
Capitalizing off someone else's fame, a huge theme of this week.
Right. It's giving Luke Combs.
It's giving Luke Combs.
Luke, my phone office for Luke fucking Combs. Literally, who are you? Like, who are you?
What is your last name? Hair Appliance, plural.
Why are you in, like, blaring through the radio 24 hours a day? Infuriating.
My vote off. Fuck, who do I not like in these set of chapters? I don't know who's someone who lives in Indianapolis. Is there any John Green? Let's vote off John Green. Why not?
John Green does live in Indianapolis.
He lives in Indianapolis. Yeah, so I'm just voting him off because if I'm going off my logic that he exists unless otherwise canon. Hey, he had that name drop in what was it? Mark of Athena?
Oh yes.
Grace, John Green. I need to know the relationship between Rick Riordan and John Green at some point. I need someone with the authority to ask them that question.
Like, are they besties? Do they hate each other? Find out the only option.
Yeah. Yeah.
But are they ex-boyfriends who...
Oh, God, no. Okay, now I'm changing mine to Brayden now just because you said that.
I was making a Commodus Apollo parallel with John Green and Rick Riordan.
No, Brayden, you fully deserve that, Brayden.
Yeah. Off the island, Brayden. Sorry.
No, I've been unhinged this episode, so I actually feel like I earned it. With that is all for this week. Robert, would you like to plug yourself once again for the last time on this double feature?
Woo, double featurette. You know, hopefully by the time this episode airs, the AMPTA comes back to the table and like agrees to give less than 1% of their money to the actors and writers who so want it, and like make sure they're not just replacing them with AI. So until I have confirmation of that, I'm only just going to plug my Heartstopper podcast, Truem Grammar Book Club. I do that with former host Megs. Our former co-host, our former guest, Megs, we talk about gay stuff because it's a gay comic. Brayden is like not shotgunning. What's the fucking term when you? Yeah, that Brayden. Hey, you know what? Descriptive jokes are funny for an audio medium. But yeah, that's it. Truem Grammar Book Club. Go read Heartstopper, please, and thank you.
With that, that's all for this week. Join us next week, folks, where we'll be discussing
chapters 13 through 16.
Make sure to follow us on social media. We're at Return to Camp on every platform that matters. And we also have a coffee account and a Redbubble store and a website, www.returntocamp.com.
We're not on X. We're on Twitter, though.
Yeah.
I think my favorite meme I've seen so far is like, stop calling it Twitter, says the man who deadnames his child.
Please.
Yep. I definitely liked it, perhaps even retweeted that.
Retweeted, notably.
Fuck Elon Musk. Fuck X.
Fuck Elon Musk. Fuck X. Fuck the idea that he wants to call it like zeet, I think is what he wants to call it. Hey, you should zeet that or whatever the fuck it is he's trying to do.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's so scary.
#FreeTwitter.